Hello, lacrosse friends. Welcome once again to Box the Beat on NLL Radio, also available on iTunes via Inside Lacrosse Podcasts. I am Stephen Stamp, your host and an editor at IL Indoor. This week, the NLL is expanding. Two teams coming next year. More teams projected for the seasons following. So the National Lacrosse League is going to need more players. Where are they going to come from? Well, many of them will come from the Arena Lacrosse League. So this week, we look at the next wave of NLL players, those guys who were competing for the All Cup, the Arena Lacrosse League Championship last weekend. I'm going to speak with the co-head coach and general manager of the Whippy Steelhawks, the expansion team that won the All Cup in a thrilling finale, Brad MacArthur. I'm also joined by the MVP of the championship game, a man who has spent a season in the NLL and is working his butt off to get back to the Pro League, Blaze Reardon. It is a really interesting pair of conversations here on Box the Beat on NLL Radio. I hope you enjoy it, lacrosse friends. All right, joining me on the Arena Lacrosse League edition of Box the Beat is Brad MacArthur, the head coach and general manager, or co-head coach and general manager of the Whippy Steelhawks. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, I want to talk about the ALL playoffs first because it was an exciting weekend. I got to be there for the semis and the final. I was actually out of the country for the quarterfinals, but the quarters is a pretty good place to start because you're an expansion team. You finished right in the middle of the pack, 500, fourth place in the 7-team league, which is pretty good given that, you know, the first three games were very expansion team-like. You got blown out in a few straight games, and then I thought had a very solid season. Then you play the Six Nations Snipers, and you know, you're obviously, it's a battle to move on. They've got a strong team, and you're down 14-13 with a minute to go. Must have been a pretty exciting final 49 seconds when you got the three goals, two from Cody McMahon, one from Austin Murphy, to come back and win that one.
Yeah, you know, Cody was just a solid player for us all year, and I don't think there's anything you know, there was nothing in the back of our minds that was going to really hold us back from it, and we just kept kind of pressing. And I think, you know, Warren Hill's he's a pretty good goalie, and we were having a tough time beating him. And I think we just happened to go on our streak of goals right at the right time, you know, at the end of the game.
Yeah, it was, I mean, certainly an exciting game and, you know, a very typical game in a lot of ways of the Arena Lacrosse League. It was a high-scoring league. Teams averaged around 15 goals, or 13 and a half, 14 goals a game. I figured it all out for my column this week. It was a high-scoring league, so 16-14, not out of the ordinary. But then, you know, we move on to the Final Four weekend. Nobody scores more than 12 in the whole weekend, and you have an overtime game that nobody got into double digits until Austin Murphy scored about 7.5 minutes into the extra frame. That was another barn burner.
Yeah, you know, defensively, we weren't happy with what we did against Six Nations. I mean, we weren't happy with the defensive end all year. We thought we were very inconsistent. We tried to roll as many players through in different situations as possible. You know, and we can touch on it kind of any number of areas, but we necessarily were not happy with our defensive effort going into that game, and it was a primary focus. It was something we talked about all year, and again leading up into that. And we've had some, you know, we had a good battle with Toronto at the end of the year in their barn. I think it was three games before playoffs had started, so you know, we had somewhat of a familiarity being able to play them so late in the season at the track, and then again a couple weeks later. But when we came out, you know, we were focused on what we needed to do. We had a game plan going in against them, and Lucas Coote, you know, he stepped up and played great this last weekend, and really kind of solidified where we thought he could be and set the bar a little bit higher for himself than where he was during the regular season. So I think things kind of fell into place. And just like any league in the playoffs, everything kind of tightens up. So, you know, the scoring was down throughout the weekend, but I thought the defense was actually across the board on the four teams looked a lot better than it did, regardless of who was playing throughout that weekend.
Yeah, and just to give folks a little context, you guys gave up the most goals in the league in the regular season, 215, which is 15.6 a game. And, you know, that's a lot in any lacrosse league. But, again, the first three games over the first two weekends, you gave up, I think, 18, 18, and 17. So, you know, like 53 goals before everything was getting sorted out. And then things improved through the year. But, I mean, Lucas Coote's average was over 15 goals a game through the season. And he, you know, I have been a big fan of his for a few years, watching him back in the CELAX days and in Senior B. And I've always thought he's a very good goalie. And I just thought he didn't look like himself for a lot of the regular season. And it's always so hard to say how much of that is the goalie and how much is the defense and how much is the synergy between them. But on Saturday in the semis and then Sunday again in the finals, he was fantastic. He's the guy that always made me think, hey, this guy should be starting in this league and should be getting a shot at the next level.
Yeah, you know, and it was kind of tough throughout the year. You know, we were an expansion team. We had guys that played in the league last year. We had guys that didn't play in the league. We had rookies. We had free agents. We'll say the first three, 4 weeks, it was a bit of a feeling out process, but we really don't have any excuses past that of why we kept going, other than the fact that we knew the team that we were going to put together and needed to put together was a team that had to run and gun. So did we know we were going to give up a lot of goals? You know, we didn't want to admit it, but I'm sure it was in the back of our minds. At the same time, we knew we could turn games into a track meet when needed, and we knew we were going to put up a bunch of goals. And if we happened to have a lull, it was going to be a bad game for us. So we fought those consistencies and we played those risks. But Lucas, you know, he's played big games in the past. You know, he's done an excellent job in CELAX, in championships. I've got familiarity with him as well. And, you know, we weren't questioning it. We didn't see anything kind of, you know, that we could point our finger at and say, hey, Lucas, fix this. But we did suggest some things throughout the year to the defense and to Lucas of what we were trying to do defensively. And, you know, Six Nations, again, we weren't happy in the quarters, but we saw some progression than what we did, because I thought Six Nations played a pretty good game, and they got some excellent outside shooters on that team that poses a bit of problem in Children's Arena, because anything over half is kind of a threat.
Yeah.
And I thought when we went into the track with the mindset of what we did the previous week, having that extra space and time, you know, it kind of works in our favor, because I think we were a quick team and we were able to get our defense and our transition guys out on the floor to pressure a little bit earlier than what we were doing in Children's, because you have to react so quick there. And I thought that just put a kind of a better wrinkle in the game plan for us.
For anyone who's not familiar with the arenas, Children's Arena in Oshawa, it's a cozy old venue. It's a pretty neat barn, but it is a small rink. It's a smaller actual physical size. And then the Toronto Rock Athletic Center, the track in Oakville, is the Rock's training facility, and it's a full-size NLL-size rink. It's, there is a lot more space. The other factor that I was interested to see how it would play out over the weekend is the ceiling, because the ceiling in Oshawa is quite low. So a lot of the goalies, I thought Brett Paris from the Peterborough Timbermen, probably got the best at it, at pretty much whipping sidearm passes very low to accommodate that ceiling and being able to hit his players. Guys would also throw bouncers or whatever. Whereas at the track, very high ceiling, and there was one pass over the weekend that Lucas Coote, I actually talked before this about what a good passer he is, and then he drifted one about 15 feet past whoever he was aiming for and bounced it up into the bench. And it occurred to me, like, they haven't had a chance other than when you would go and play Toronto at the track, which I think was just once in the season. He hadn't really had a chance to even throw passes like that.
No, not really. Mm. Not in the opportunity. I mean, where we practice in Oshawa, there's you know, we've got to keep things a little bit low and on key, but that's one of the ways that we practiced as well. I mean, being able to kind of loft them up in the air was a bit of a bonus for us because we weren't traditionally able to do that throughout the year. And I think the break you're talking about was, I think it was Adam Peroni looking down the floor and Lucas yes. just turned around after a rebound and fired it.
Yeah.
And I think it was a one bouncer right into the far end mesh.
Yeah, it was. And the funny thing is, I mean, it was in the final and Paul St. John, the commissioner of the league, was doing the color commentary with me. And I said, like, boy, Lucas, you know, I said Lucas Coote's a good passer, and then he airmails that one, but he hasn't had a chance to practice except in, you know, in warm up a bit. And Paul St. John was like, yeah, because he probably could have put a bit more air under that one instead of ripping it on a line.
Yeah. But, you know, it kind of goes with what we had. We battled through adversity all year, and, you know, we were able to scoop a few practices at Children's Arena. Prior to some of our games, we were able to get in there a little bit early. But yeah, in terms of those big rinks or bigger rinks, we weren't able to get in there a lot. And you know, sometimes it showed and sometimes it didn't. People kind of wonder what we were doing, but you know, we made do with what we have. No excuses. If we, you know, if we faltered again, we'd be fully accountable for it. But you know, we had those practice at the barn in Oshawa, which is a, you know, it's a training rink. It's not, it's, you know, makes Children's look like an Olympic size rink. So, you know, there's a lot of good one-on-one space for us in there. And we were able to get up and down the floor, which is really what we wanted to do. And those Wednesday nights were great for us in that manner.
Yeah. When you talk about being a, you know, a team that is going to run, that can get into track meets if you need to, It that can be a bit of a risky proposition against a team like Toronto that has, I mean, Jordan Critch and Dustin Caravella are so dangerous in transition, and they've got other guys that can run as well. And then you're looking at the Paris River Wolves in the final, and they've got, I mean, Liam Patton and Brett Olbikas, who Olbikas had like 17 or 18 goals in the season. You know, Travis Burton, and they have a lot of guys who can run and be dangerous as well. So you have to, if you're going to embrace that philosophy, you have to be really prepared to know how you're going to go about it so you don't let them be taking off too, right?
Yeah, but that started for us when we got the team. So, yeah. I mean, when we were awarded the team or you know, asked, like Paul and us had discussions and we came on board as a staff, we really kind of started shaping how we were going to look and what we were going to do. And I mean, many of the teams I'm involved with kind of have similar identities in terms of how we play and what we do. But this one was just a little bit different because, you know, we had an expansion draft. We had our combine, and then we had our actual Arena League draft. So there was a little bit more thrown into there for us than what a normal team, I guess, would have been used to. So we really had to make a pick because we only had one shot at it. I mean, there was teams going into training camps with, you know, upwards of 35 guys,
right,
whereas we were kind of waiting for guys, teams to cut players because we only had 15 to 23 at certain tryouts.
Yeah.
And that's all we had. So we had to scour for free agents. We had to scour for trades and look at that with the mindset of, you know, do these players fit the philosophy that we're going to embrace? And it was great because we, as a staff, we had some good arguments over that. And the proof's in the pudding, we did win. But the players that we got and the players that we brought were all thinking about that mindset of we're going to play this high risk, high reward, but what I thought was a very entertaining style of play.
It was. I mean, I saw a lot of your games since I was calling most of the games in Oshawa, and I really did enjoy it. I think it is an interesting one. Like you say, high risk, high reward, and the reward is you won a championship. The risk is you were 49 seconds away from losing in the quarterfinals. and not being anywhere near it. So, but there are a lot of teams that are competitive. I think there's the expansion draft where you got to pick some players from each of the teams. There's the Arena Lacrosse League draft, of course, the entry draft where you did trade some guys back to get some picks, and some of those worked out quite well. And then free agents, I think the prize free agent, I don't think there's much question, was a young man named Blaze Reardon, who was released by the Buffalo Bandits. He was an undrafted free agent in the National Lacrosse League and was really just starting to find his way. And then, it's so hard to stick in the NLL. And he came down, and what an attitude. I mean, you talked about what he did to be at this championship weekend. I'd like you to just share that about what Blaze had to go through for that.
We knew beforehand he couldn't make the quarterfinal weekend. He told us well in advance that his Major League Lacrosse team, the Rochester Rattlers, had since moved to Dallas, and they were going to be holding their first training camp in the Cowboys practice facility in Dallas. So he wasn't going to be available, and we didn't want to make that too public, but our team knew, and nothing really we can do about that. He was going to be away, but we just thought in terms of ourselves, we were going to be okay with that. So he ended up missing that one. And then after camp was done, he went back down and did his things down in Florida. He's working at a camp. I think it's actually called The Farm, okay. Living out of a luxurious RV, working with Casey Powell at a facility down there, teaching lacrosse, introducing lacrosse to elementary schools, and introducing Casey's brand. I believe it's called Speed Lacrosse. But he was bound and determined that if we made it through that weekend, he's going to be coming back. So here's a kid who books a flight, finds one as least expensive as possible, flies into Buffalo, and ends up driving down to Oakville from there to make our game. Gets his own hotel room once we win, and ends up winning a championship and being around for us that weekend. Without, it's a pay-to-play league. There's a guy who sacrificed a lot, and there's a guy who's flying from Dallas to Florida to Toronto or to Buffalo, driving down to Toronto or Oakville area, getting a last-minute hotel, and then coming back the next day and going to battle. And he's just a great teammate. He fit in with the guys regardless of how many games, he was going to miss. Most of the games he missed were due to weather. He did have a couple conflicts. He was playing for Team USA at LaxCon for one of them. And he did have one of them. But I know for a fact there was two or three of them that snow was a huge issue. And other than that, you probably would have saw him in 10 to 11 games this year. And he's driving from Rochester, and I did that drive to Rochester for a couple of years with John Grant Jr. and Jason Crosby when we were playing for the Nighthawks, and that's not an easy drive, especially during the winter. You fight the elements coming from one side of the lake, and then you get it on the other side when you're down there. And here's this kid doing it kind of on his own, coming around the lake, and he'd roll into Children's Arena on a Friday night with a smile on his face and hang out with the guys and then head back to Rochester and have to work in the morning.
And the amazing thing about Blaze, I find, is, I mean, I think it's a pretty well-known story, but for anyone who's not familiar with it, he's a field lacrosse goalie. He's probably best known for the goalie goal he scored in the NCAA tournament a couple of years ago in his last year in college at Albany. And he was... not to be uncharitable, he was built like a goalie, and he has worked very hard to get himself in the shape, the fitness level to play as a runner at high levels of lacrosse. I mean, he played in the National Lacrosse League a full season with Buffalo, and he has turned himself into a good box lacrosse player. Now, he played Junior B in Akwesasne. He has been working at this for a while, but he's really committed to this game, and it's just super impressive, I think, what this young man has done. And I remember watching him. I was at LaxCon in Baltimore when he did play with the U.S., and I went down and watched their practice, and I remember seeing him. They were doing some drills and just kind of a little offhand thing after they'd run a play in a drill, and it was kind of between sets or whatever. He just grabbed a ball and did this move with his stick, and he just bounced a shot under a goalie and threw into the net. And it was so fluid and so natural that he looked honestly like the guys that you and I grew up watching and playing against and things, who just had a stick in their hands from the time they were 3 years old, and it was just the most natural thing in the world.
Yeah, and I mean, he played with some great players up in Akwesasne, and he did win a Founders Cup. Yeah. So, you know, it's not like he didn't come into this with zero experience. Mm-hmm. Even the drive from Rotch to Akwesasne is not a short drive.
No.
And, you know, he was committed to doing that, and that was my first real exposure to Blaze and his talent level. And you're right, physically he's got himself into excellent shape. He's deceptively fast. He's a big kid. Mm-hmm. And he carries himself that way. But I mean, we've seen him in a few, you know, foot races this year with some very athletic players, and he's either tracking them down or creating space between them. But I really didn't see anybody overtaking him in terms of that. And he's got the box sense now to be able to create space.
Mm-hmm. Great job of protecting his stick. And, I mean, what we haven't mentioned with all this talk of him coming up and getting in the hotel room and doing all this, he was the MVP of the Arena League Championship, the All-Cup, with 4 goals and 4 assists. The last one was an empty net goal. But, I mean, he was fantastic. And he could have had 8 or 10 goals. He was open so much in the middle. He was just I said on the broadcast, like, he's a big guy, but he just – it's like they can't see him. He's so good at finding the perfect time to slip into open spaces.
Yeah, and I think creatively our offensive group – you know, they were very, I mean, the whole team was very fluid, but the offensive group, the chemistry between our group of players was, you would think that many of them played together in the past for a lengthy period of time. I mean, there was things that they did that you kind of looked at and kind of went, wow, where did that come from? Because it, you know, wasn't in our playbook. And these guys would rip something out that, you know, the obviously chemistry was just there. And, you know, he'd have that with our righties, he'd have that with our lefties, and vice versa. It was a pleasure to watch all those guys come together, but just having that ounce of chemistry and you know, just looking at them and the way they did things and the way they got things done was, you know, a credit to them all. But, you know, guys like Blaze, who can step in after not being able to practice most of the year and just pick it up, it's such amazing talent for those guys, and you know, credit to them for being able to do it.
And I do want to mention, we haven't mentioned your coaching staff yet either, and you know, the players obviously a ton of credit, but I think the coaching staff's been very dedicated too. Yourself and Gavin Prout are the co-head coaches, right? And then you've got Ryan McMichael helping out, and Chad Culp. So you've got some pretty veteran lacrosse minds and guys who are putting a lot into this league, and it's the one thing about the Arena Lacrosse League, and they like to tout themselves as a development league for the NLL, and it is. It's the best place for players right now to develop, to be ready to play. I mean, guys go up and down from the NLL. A lot of guys, I think a lot of these players are going to go to the next level and play in the NLL, and that doesn't just go for players. That goes for coaches as well. To me, you're one of the best candidates to take over a coaching spot in the National Lacrosse League. And the other factor is the third tine of the fork, you could say, is the refs, because the NLL is going to need more refs with expansion and more games. They need more refs. And this is a proving ground and development ground for them as well.
It is. And if you really think about it in the big picture, if the Arena Lacrosse League isn't around, you know, there's 7 teams worth of players, so 7 times 25 players,
yeah,
that are not playing lacrosse or box lacrosse at a high level in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as the NLL grows, the development leagues and the wintertime playing is going to become that much more important. You know, we would see NLL coaches or scouts every now and then, but as it kind of came closer to trade deadline and injuries started racking up for some of these teams, you'd always kind of catch out of the game. You'd see somebody kind of sneaking out of the corner and taking some notes, and texting me later about, asking about a player and what he was like. So you can kind of see it starting to creep in that this is going to be the place to be. And, there's a concept behind it. And the more that these players are gaining exposure and getting experience, can only help. And like you said, same for the coaches, and same for the referees. And, it takes work, it takes effort, and, there's a lot of people trying to make it work. And this is Paul's kind of second go around mm-hmm. at it. And I think he's onto something with the way it's being done now. So, players have a vested interest in being there. And all teams who lend their practice players have a vested interest in seeing those players play. And as a coach and our coaching staff, we all have a vested interest because we all want to succeed. We all want to move on. It was Gavin and Chad's first real foray into coaching, but Chad just retired. Gavin hasn't been out of it too long. And, Ryan McMichael had just does, he played in this championship game last year. Yeah. I think he actually scored the winning goal. So he had some familiarity in this league, but he's, he coached a couple of years out West and he's looking to get his feet wet and get it at a higher level. And, they all did well and they all put effort in and for what it takes to win a championship at a level like this, it's not easy. Yeah. And everybody makes sacrifices from the players, the coaches, to the referees and, the people, the management of the league and the staff. And it's just, I think, like I said, as the league grows professionally, then this league is going to become that much more important. And just for the sake that there's so many players around here to be able to scout and look at.
Yeah. Yeah. And not to take anything away. I mean, there are a lot of players that are going to move on to the NLL with the expansion that are out in BC and guys from Alberta and Saskatchewan, Manitoba to a lesser extent, but growing. And I would love to see something similar for them. So that those guys can keep, I think of somebody like a Tyson Rowe, who was such a good prospect and then, just nowhere to play. Adam Jay has actually come here. I mean, he was playing out West and he has come here and played for Toronto this year. And I think he made huge strides this year. There are going to be leagues in the States, which is great as Box is exploding down there. But right now, this is, I think, a good model for people to follow in terms of giving these guys a chance to keep developing.
It is. There's no doubt. We had reached out at one point during the year to players from the United States, from Saskatchewan, Alberta, British Columbia. We had talked to players at different. I'm trying to think which date it was. Colorado had played at Toronto that day, and there were some players playing in the game that were released. They weren't from the area, but we went and talked to them just in case, because you never know. We talked to some Alberta kids, and some of them indicated that they might be coming to school in Ontario next year. Hmm. And we want them to play. Ideally, if they land kind of around the GTA area, they've got plenty of teams to be able to play for.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of schools and options for them to be at. So, but you're right. If it can be, if it can be planted around different areas and we can kind of consolidate the talent for that and kind of get our hooks into it so that there's a development league and it's very much the same and it's not a kind of a broken process for the NLL. I think it just plays into their hands, but it also gives any aspiring person in the league a chance to actually succeed.
It's funny, as we're talking about that, it occurred to me that I mentioned players and coaches and refs. And then I realized 3/4 of your coaching staff also are to some extent aspiring or some level of broadcasters. Because I've had three of the 4 coaches on your team do color with me. You've done color with me for National Lacrosse League games, for Toronto Rock games. I've had Ryan McMichael called one of the first ever Arena League games last year. He just came early in the opening day. I think it was the first game, actually, because he was playing in the third game. He's like, hey, do you want me to sit in, do color with you? I'm like, sure. He was great. I mean, he's quite a character. He was very good. And Gavin Prout did Brooklyn Revenant games with me last year. So it's a fourth prong of the fork. It's now a four-tined fork of development?
Well, we can work on Culper. You know, Culpomania's got a pretty big following out there.
It's true.
He may not know it yet. He's pretty new to Twitter.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you check him out at Culpomania 19, I think, he's on there. But we can work on him, see if we can't get him onto a broadcast somewhere.
Well, Hinda has been building Culpomania for a while. She's been working at that.
Yeah, I'm sure she's trademarked it, copyrighted, whatever it is that those brands need. But you know, we can work on him, make sure the fourth one gets in there.
He'd have to lose
the depth. I don't think it's fair to call us, any of us, aspiring broadcasters.
No, I was regretting that as I said it.
But, adequate fill-ins might be.
There we go.
Or just available.
Availability is one of the best abilities.
Yes, yes. No, I think all four of us will stick to the coaching and running teams type side. It was, it was a pleasure working with those guys this year. Chad's got his involvement with New England and scouting, and just fresh out of the league, and he also plays for me for Team Israel, and we've played with each other as teammates. So, we kind of all had ties to each other, one way or another. It was nice to see everybody kind of move along. I mean, Ryan McMichael probably, he doesn't get a lot of the credit he deserves, and it probably pains me to say it, because if he hears it, I'm never going to hear the end of it.
True.
But, you know, the kid ran a good offense this year, and he really put some spokes in the wheels for the players, and had some very good points brought up, and wasn't afraid, number one, of criticism, or two, to listen and ask for feedback. And I think that was something, you know, as a young coach, I needed to learn, and he's already got that. So, there's some plays that he ran and asked for out of our players and gave them options during this semifinal, we'll call it the championship run from the quarterfinal on, he deserves credit for those. And credit to him, because he probably doesn't get what he deserves. And then you got Gavin, who's, first foray into it. He's the local guy down there. He's kind of the point man. He did a lot of our sponsorship and fundraising for us. But, he's reaching out to players. He's reaching out to general managers. He's reaching out to, the guys in the NHL, the practice players. When we were trying to reach Blaze, we kind of took a two-headed approach to it. I reached out to him as a guy who's coached against him. Gavin had played with him in Rochester with the Rattlers, I believe.
Oh, okay.
So, it was one of those things where we're like, okay, let's divide and conquer here, and how are we gonna do it best? But some of the things that you don't see behind the scenes are Gavin's the guy who goes to the grocery store, before every week and makes sure that there's food on the table for the guys coming to the game. And we have an equipment manager, and he's dedicated and whatnot, but Gavin took it upon himself to do that kind of stuff. And, nobody sees that. They just kind of see us wheel it in out of his truck or whatever, and probably don't think anything else. But, he's that guy. He's the guy that's going to do that. And then on top of that, we're dealing with lineups and players and availability and jerseys and laundry and whatever else. And, say what you want, he's a Hall of Famer, and he's doing a great job. And his first foray into it, he wins a championship. So it was just, like I said, a pleasure to work with those guys. And then you got Culper on the end of the bench, and we happen to live 3 minutes away from each other here in Barrie. And we get a lot of time with each other in the truck, driving down to and from games. So we get to talk quite a bit about the game, how it's going, and he's not, like I said, he's not far removed, and he did play for me a couple of years ago, so it's nice to have feedback from a guy who's played for me but has the maturity level to, tell me where how he sees things, and maybe I'm wrong, or maybe I can adjust things. And it was just awesome. It was, we won this weekend, and I kind of stood back and started watching and looking the smile on some of our guys' faces. And I think Tim Patero from Vintage Lax took a picture of our coaching staff together, and I think the smile on our faces between the four of us was probably about as big as it could get.
Yeah, and I was watching as he took that picture. Well, he took a few of them, and it was kind of funny because he wanted you to lean in, like crouch down and lean in and put your finger up, and you guys were all like this. Like it was a little awkward getting to the moment, but it turned out to be a great picture at the end.
It did, but I don't think Tim realized that the lack of flexibility between us and then trying to bend over and hold that trophy at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, it was a group of four that was ready to just tilt over.
Yeah. I have to share a Ryan McMichael story because he does, he's a beauty. He's a friend of mine. I just really enjoy him as a guy. He's definitely not someone a lot of people like on the floor because he played with a touch of his father in him for sure. And he's a funny guy, and but he was coaching, and on the floor he can be such, like sometimes you're like, Ryan, just stop it with some of the things he does. But last year he's playing for the Oshawa Outlaws at a game in Paris, and I'm calling the game, and the box where I call games is right above the bench. Like you hear it, see everything that's happening. So Steve McCarthy got kicked out of the game because he didn't have his coaching card with him or something. It was something strange. Like he wasn't allowed to keep coaching. And
right.
Yeah. So Ryan McMichael, they say, somebody's got a coach. Does anybody have a coaching card? And Ryan's like, yeah, I do. And they're like, okay, but you can't be like a player coach. You have to coach. He's like, no problem. Takes off his shirt, his jersey and his pads, he took off his shoes and his gloves and everything.
Yep.
And he started coaching. He stood on the bench and I was like, oh my goodness. And he made a seamless transition from playing in that game to coaching his team. It was pretty impressive. I was like, wow, he can actually do this even under the circumstances of taking over mid game when he was playing. And so that's when he started coaching this year, and people were like, wow, can he actually do that? I was like, yeah, he can actually coach. He's actually quite good at it.
Yeah. And like I said, I don't know how to say it any other way, but Ryan was surrounded by three players that played in the NLL.
Yeah.
Chad was, I believe, there the longest out of the three of us.
Probably.
Gavin's Hall of Famer. You know, I had my large mug of tea, I guess you would say. And Ryan didn't. And there were question marks. Don't get me wrong. There were people who asked questions, and you know, it was pretty easy to say to them, you know, mind your business and let us do our thing. Like he ran practices when there was weather and Chad and I couldn't make it and Gavin couldn't make it. Ryan ran practice. Now he went helmets and gloves, which I wasn't too impressed with, but the players thought it was funny.
Yeah.
And they told us about it after, and Ryan didn't offer any excuses, and he actually thought that was why we won. So but you know, he's just one of those guys that when all was said and done, he wanted to be a coach, and he just did a good job at it, and he just needed a chance. Needed people to give him that chance and offer him the support. You know, he could have easily got lost in the shadows, and he didn't. You know, we certainly appreciate Ryan, and we know what he did. And like I said, there was plays that he ran and things that he did with our offense, and our guys went out and executed. And you know, like I said, that credit needs to belong to that end of the bench, and that's where he stands.
And I think for anyone who doesn't know him, the reason we're trying to explain this, basically I would say he doesn't take many things, including himself, too seriously. But
he loves life.
Yeah, he does. But he takes coaching seriously.
He does. He takes lacrosse and coaching. It's a passion for him.
Yeah. So my plan was we're going to go through the article I wrote today. My musings this week was about the next wave of NLL players just finished the chase for the All Cup, and we're going to talk about it. We've been on for a while. We shouldn't take too long, but you've had a look at it. A few of your players are on there. I mean, Austin Murphy led the league in scoring. Obviously, Blaze Reardon I talk about quite a bit. Your goalie, Lucas Coote. But there are a lot of other players. Jordan Critch and Dustin Caravello, to me, are guys that, I mean, what a dynamic duo. There are a lot of players. I thought the team that you played in the final, the Paris River Wolves, have three defense transition players in Brett Olbikas and Travis Burton and Liam Patton, who definitely can play at the next level. Olbukas has been in some camps. Patton played a bit with Buffalo this year, and Burton will be in the draft this fall, and I think could be a first rounder, and it's a very strong first round. What do you see in terms of the players in this league who can make their way up to the National Lacrosse League as expansion comes? Or, I mean, I think some of these guys could make it anyway, but expansion is just going to open up more spots and make it even more guys getting there.
Yeah, you know, and the great thing is, like, Burt's, I've coached him with Team Ontario. I've kept in contact with the kid, and a guy like him, I think he's matured physically and waited long enough now that when he does enter, you know, it raised his stock considerably. He's played against men now for, two seasons at least. I think I thought he played a year of CLAX as well.
He did, yeah.
And I mean, so he's been playing against men for 3 years, which I believe he's the same age as Teeter, so he's not that old.
Yeah.
You know, he'd be 19 or 20 years old. And I just think that kind of gives him a good idea because, you know, stepping in and being able to play major right away, you kind of get lost in the shuffle. But this guy's been able to play, you know, him, Liam Patton, both have played against men. Mm-hmm. And I think that just serves a very good purpose for those guys when they're coming in. So that's again, another ideal about this league is you've got guys that are practice players. You've got guys that have played in the league like Blaze, and others, you know, that for whatever reason just are not playing this year. And you kind of look at, you know, Mike Burke had a great year with Colorado a few years back. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he hasn't been able to find his way back for whatever reason. I don't know what that is. But if you look at it, you know, he's one of the premier offensive talents in the league.
Yeah.
And if you're a defensive or transition guy, you want to kind of mark up him, and because that's who teams are going to be watching, right? Those are the guys who make the scattering reports. So you want to be able to D up on those guys and start moving. And I know, you know, I keep my eyes open just to kind of look at who we might look for in a trade, a free agent. That maybe some coach doesn't see what we see, and maybe misses something, or, you know, we happen to get a phone call from one of our NLL contacts that, you know, doesn't have the, you know, pick a, maybe a Western team that may not be able to get down here all the time to see someone that we're seeing week in and week out, and asking us for feedback on that. You just kind of go through the list and you pick out different players, and those guys would certainly be predominant ones. I mean, Liam stood out at the Minto Cup this year,
yeah,
for Calgary. Mm-hmm. and did a great job. I'm not surprised to see him do what he's done so far. I actually, it's going to be nice to see him 2 or 3 years from now to see where he is, because I expect that he'd be a full-time NHL player for someone. But you know, there's Blaze McCullough. Is a guy that stood out for me this weekend.
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to see more of him. I know he plays senior B, mm-hmm. but that he was a guy that kind of stood out for me for Paris.
Mm-hmm.
He just did a bang up job getting down the floor. Very few unforced errors. And I just, you know, there's guys on my team that are certainly the same way, and others, you know, for us this weekend, I looked at Corey Upshaw, who for the last three games was one of our most consistent performers on the defensive end. And he probably doesn't get a lot of love, and he should, because he doesn't make a lot of scouting reports for being the guy that you want to pick on.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that says a lot about what you can do. And the league's kind of peppered with guys like that. Mm-hmm. Every team's got a few guys here and there that are, you know, could play in the NHL, and for whatever reason right now just aren't.
Corey Upshaw is a guy to me that, I mean, he was drafted a few years back by the Peterborough Lakers. I remember seeing him at his I was at the first practice. I live in Peterborough, so it's handy to pop down when they have a practice, which isn't that often, but the practice that year he was down, and I mean, he had very little chance to make that team. They were just a star-studded lineup, probably defending Man Cup champions that year. They were winning it a lot at the time. And he, you know, he's played senior B, he's bounced around. And when you were coaching the Barry Blizzard in Selax, he was around. I remember he was around all the time. And I was thinking, like, why is this guy still around? It took me a bit to figure out who he was. But he was always really friendly, always really happy. And I thought, like, I know he's played, but what's he doing now? Like, why is he always here in a suit? And it was, you know, he had injury issues over a couple of years. And I talked to him about it on the weekend, yeah, actually, and said, you know, it's really nice to see you back and healthy. And he said, you know, I don't feel like I'm fully there yet, but I'm getting there. And on the video, the championship game, he got a lot of love because Paul St. John and I both agreed with your assessment. I thought he was one of the best players in the Final Four. I thought on Saturday he was outstanding. I thought Sunday he was very good too. Saturday to me was just a masterpiece effort that he put in.
Yeah, and I mean that's what it's for, right? I mean, if you're an NHL team and you're coming down and you're looking for a guy that, you know, maybe you don't need the young prospect. Maybe you're looking for a guy who's maybe a little bit more mature, on and off the floor, physically. And you kind of look at Corey and say, you know what, this might be a guy that can come in and fill in for some games for us. Like, he might not go up there and be an 18 game guy. Yeah. But he might go up there and be a 10 to 12 game guy, and a guy that you're not going to be afraid to throw in and you know, do the job, on the defensive end.
Another guy like that, and I didn't actually mention, I'm glad Corey Upshaw came up because I didn't mention him in the article. I knew I'd missed some people. And another guy that is in the article is Mark Farthing, and we talked a bit about him on Sunday. And I'm a big fan of the player that he developed into in Selax. I mean, he as a junior in Peterborough, and then in when he was trying to make the NLL, he was playing for the Durham Turf Dogs in Selax. He was kind of a transition guy, and you know, not bad defensively, but, you know, trying to run and things. And then his last year in Durham, the last year of Selax, he was the captain of the Turf Dogs, and I talked to him about it and said, you know, you have just become a solid defender. Like, and he was, like, it was unbelievable. The slides he was making and the toughness. And he said, yeah, the coaches asked me to just play D and I just did it. And I thought he was possibly the best defender in that league. And he finally got his shot with the Toronto Rock, played one game, played a very good game for them, blew out his knee, which he'd blown out his last year junior. He blew it out again in that one game with the Rock, and it's taken him a couple of years to get back. He's 28 years old, but speaking of coaches, I mean, that's a guy who is turning into a terrific coach already. He coaches for the Trent Excalibur and Kufla, but he's coached junior A, he's coached various levels. And I mean, he would get into it when he's coaching like the Bantams. He was into it, yeah, and he was really committed, and he is such a solid player. And another guy, he's a character. He is a very funny guy, a great guy, and the kind of guy you're like, he doesn't seem to take a lot of things seriously, but then you watch him coaching and he puts it on and he turns on the seriousness, and it's not like he's acting. He, again, like Ryan McMichael, is passionate about this game and is great as a coach, and yeah, he can still play. I'd love to see him in the NLL.
Well, I can't say enough about Fires. I think what I said on Sunday after the game was that I felt there were some NLL teams that missed the boat this year because every team in that league could use a guy like Mark Farthing on their team.
Yeah.
And he brings so much to the table that goes kind of unchecked, or, you know, there's no statistical value for it. Mm-hmm. And it's not even funny. He was a free agent signing for us. It took a little while for us to be able to coax him to come out and be a part of the team. But I think he was part of that resurgent record that we had. You know, we went on a bit of a run, and it was just coincided with when we added him to our roster. But I think the consistent factor between the players that we added, and he kind of stands out to me in this, is the quality of person that we were able to bring in. But the players looked up to him.
Yeah.
You know, he came in as a veteran player. He's been involved in Man Cups. He's been involved at high levels. He's recruited for Trent. Like you said, he's done a number of things. But his openness to engage with the coaching staff and execute was second to none. I mean, there would be things that I'd say to him specifically and say, you know, Fire, I need you to do this. And there was no questions asked. And, you know, sometimes they weren't the nicest things that needed to be done, and he would go and do them, you know, standing out and leading by example. So, I mean, our coaching staff was completely impressed by him, but I don't care if he's 28 or he's 22, if he's around next year, that's a problem. He needs to get scooped up. That's a character kid, character guy, and you're going to want him on a team. He brings that much energy and enthusiasm, and I think he's going to realize that when he goes out there. Again, he's probably not an 18-game type guy, but you're going to want him in, because in a clutch game, in a clutch championship, or, you know, you're tied with 30 seconds left, he might not be your every game guy, but you're going to find out. You're going to put him on the floor.
Yeah.
And you're going to have every confidence that he's going to get it done. And I think the only reason he's not an 18-game guy is because he gives up his body so much. Yeah. He's going to need rest.
Yeah. That's true.
And, you know, I'm a Durham region guy giving a Peterborough guy some love, so I think that, you know.
That speaks volumes.
I don't care about postal codes. The kid can play.
I'm going to wrap up. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that's just the bottom line for me. The kid can play. I don't care about postal codes. Never have. But, you know, he was really a glue guy for us. And I was really happy that we were able to win and see, you know, I got some good pictures of Farth having some good smiles, and I just really enjoyed that.
Nice. I'm going to wrap up by throwing in a quick plug for you. I've enjoyed having you as a guest. Always enjoy chatting lacrosse with you, which we do frequently. And to me, you said, you know, if Mark Farthing's around, there's a problem. My view, having spoken lacrosse with you, having seen how you organize, how you run teams, how you put things together, that I think as teams come to the National Lacrosse League, or as people need coaches, they need to be talking to you. And I would, if I had an NLL team, I'd be more than comfortable bringing you in to run it. And I certainly hope that this is a springboard for you as well.
Well, I appreciate it. I certainly can't take all of it. I mean, like I said, I had Prouder, Culper, and Mick were around from the start, from our first meetings this year, and couldn't have done any of it this year without each other. So, like I said, I appreciate it, but I always have a good support staff with me, and I think that's more kind of a direction of success than it is just myself.
Thanks very much for taking the time, and it turned out to be a lot of time. I appreciate you being available.
Oh, thanks, Tamper.
Joining me on Box LaBeat, the new wave or next wave edition, is All Cup MVP Blaze Reardon. Welcome to the show.
Hey, glad to be here.
So, anytime a player plays in the National Lacrosse League, as you did last season, and then is released, you know, just before the season, I guess you have a couple of options in your situation. You could mope and start to look ahead to the Major League Lacrosse season, or you could join the Arena Lacrosse League and keep a stick in your hands, keep playing, keep working to grow your game. Obviously, you went for the latter.
Yeah, no, being an American that hasn't had the same experience as some of these guys, I knew that if I kept pushing and kept getting up into Canada and making my name felt and getting in games and playing against the best competition I could, it would only help me prepare for what's next. And it's always been a dream of mine. So I knew, and I had a lot of good advice from people like Merrick Thompson and other people along the way that's been through the process that said, that kind of encouraged me to come down and do this. And if it wasn't for a great coaching staff and a great organization like Whippy, it would have been a lot harder, but I'm happy with the decision that I made.
What was the process in winding up with the Whippy Steelhawks? I've talked to Brad MacArthur in this episode, the head coach or co-head coach with Gavin Prout and the general manager, and he talked me through it a bit, but just tell me what the process was like from your end.
Yeah, I actually run a lacrosse tournament up in Ellicottville with Ryan Powell and my father. And Gavin Plow came down and played on one of the open teams. And so I got to know Gavin a little bit. And just being a lax guy, we started talking a bunch. And When he decided that he was going to coach the Whippy Steelhawks, he gave me a call and found out what happened and said, hey, we got a spot for you. I'd love to teach you some things. I think you could learn a lot from us. We have a pretty good squad. And I just explained to him, I was like, ah, it's a big commitment. It's far away, getting the Whippy every weekend and practices and stuff. And he said, we can make it work. We're here for you. We want to make you the best player that you could be. And with the staff that they had on hand, it kind of speaks for itself. They had guys that have been through the process and know what it's like to be at the biggest stage. So I figured the best way to learn is from guys like that. So I decided to make the commitment and told him that I would make it to as much stuff as I could. And he was super accommodating and we were flexible on both ends. And so it worked out great. And I was able to play, I think, 8 regular season games and then the playoffs. So it worked out very good.
Yeah, you actually got into 7 regular season games, and you were second in the league in points per game, 6.9. You got 15 goals and 33 assists, and it went really well. And you're actually, it's interesting because you look at your numbers, and they look really good, but the number of times that you were having trouble finishing, like you were getting chances and just guys, goalies were getting a little bits of balls and things. And the same kind of happened in the playoffs. I mean, you in the final, you had 4 goals, one of them the empty netter at the end. But honestly, I thought you could have had 8 or 9 pretty easily with the number of times you found open space.
Yeah, no, I was happy about the win, but I was talking to my dad and kind of reflecting on the game, and I just told him, I was like, you know, I should have had about 4 more great opportunities. I'm surrounded by such great players that draw so much attention, and they were finding me all over the place. And I think it's a product of not being able to get out to a box net. You know, Monday through Friday, I'm here in Florida working, so I've been shooting on field bats. You know, kind of working on my goalie craft a little bit still. And anytime that you're not getting live rep shooting on a goalie, it's hard to emulate that. And I think that I just was a little bit snake bitten. Some of it was good goaltending, and the rest of it is just repetition. You know, if you're not shooting on a goalie all week and getting live reps with guys whacking at your hands and getting chopped off, you're not going to improve. So I think it's definitely something that I need to continue to work on, something that I will work on. And it's not the games like that bring out moments like that where you learn that, oh, if I would have done this, going back and watching the game, I was like, if I would have done this or this, it could have resulted in maybe having 2 more goals and 2 more assists and helping my team out. So definitely stuff that I'm going to continue to work on, and there's always room for improvement.
And for anyone who's not clear on the, I mean, you mentioned you made it as much as you could. You weren't at practice much, I know, during the season because they were during the week. And it's about a 7-hour round trip for you from where you were in Rochester to Oshawa, where the Oshawa area where the Steelhawks play in practice.
Yeah, no, it was tough, but the coaches did a really good job communicating via email. They drew up a lot of stuff. And then when I would get to the game, I would try to get to the games a little earlier than everyone else. That way I could sit down with the coaches and they could walk me through what they went through and kind of give me an idea what the game plan was. And I was also watching a lot of the games, the other team's games, which helped because I was able to watch film and kind of dissect and see some tendencies. So not being able to get to practice is never a good thing, but I just kind of made do with the stuff that I had, the resources that I had.
And of course, again, for anyone who's not familiar with it, I think most people are in the lacrosse world, but if people aren't familiar with the story, you are a goalie in field lacrosse. A lot of people know you from that fantastic goal you scored in the NCAA tournament a few years ago when you were playing for Albany. So you're making the transition from field to box, but it's an extra leap when you're going from goaltending to playing forward. And it's been a while now. I mean, you played Junior B in Akwesasne and won a Founders Cup, and you played for the U.S. at the 2015 Worlds. But still, that's a long road to go from field goalie to box forward.
Yeah, no, definitely something that that I take pride in. I know I'm one step behind. I grew up with a short stick in my hand, but I didn't grow up with a box lacrosse mentality. It was always field lacrosse. So I take it upon myself that I like to, when people ask what position I play, if they really ask, I'll break it down. But I like to just say I'm a lacrosse player. I believe even as when I'm in goalie mode that I'm still another player on the field. It's more than just being a goalie or being an offensive guy. I'm a lacrosse player. I'm there to do whatever my team needs to win games, and I kind of pride myself in being able to play anywhere on the field and have a good understanding of what's going on anywhere on the field. But just trying to get over that stigma of being an American goalie to being a box forward has been the most challenging part for me, I think. It's always hard when you look out there and the first thing you think, oh, he's the goalie. So I'm trying to break those habits. I'm trying to learn as much as I can, and trying to work on my craft and my game as much as possible, and hopefully I can continue to grow and keep getting better.
And I know you've worked very hard on, you know, changing yourself physically from a goalie to a forward, you know, getting a little fitter, a little quicker, and also working hard on your stick skills. I remember down at the LaxCon in Baltimore in February when you played with the U.S. team in the scrimmage, the blue-white scrimmage, and I went down and watched practice in the morning before the game, and you I remember watching you guys were running some drills, and there's one play where kind of it was between reps or whatever, a ball kind of bounced out and you just picked it up and the goalie was still focused. So you made a quick little move and bounced a ball between his legs into the net. And you looked so comfortable with the stick in your hands and the ball in your stick and doing things. You looked like the guys that growing up in Peterborough, I saw a ton of lacrosse, a ton of guys who have been playing since they were three or four. And that move reminded me of those guys. So I think you're making a lot of progress, and you must feel like you're getting pretty comfortable as a forward.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely, every time I get out there and play, I feel more comfortable. And I know though that, you know, It's the best players in the world. Me feeling comfortable, I need to sometimes get outside my comfort zone. So like you said, I've been hitting the track a lot more. I've been focusing on doing stick skills and watching a lot of film. And I just believe that the more that I continue to play and the more that I work, hopefully it will become a little better. But it's all about getting outside my comfort zone, because like I said, American, didn't grow up around the game. Like I took a journey to the reservation as an 18-year-old, ended up loving it, resulted in a Founders Cup. So everything I've kind of done to get to this point, I got to step outside my comfort zone a little. And every time I do, I seem to get more comfortable in these situations. And I hope eventually it gets to the point where it's just naturally coming to me every time. And I'm starting to get that way where I don't have to think as much, and I'm just naturally doing things, setting picks, just from watching lacrosse and watching some of the best in the world. So I'm hoping it continues to become more natural, and I continue to get better, and hopefully it all pay off.
You were an undrafted free agent when you played with Buffalo last year, and that was a long road. I mean, not being drafted, even guys who are drafted in the second half of the draft, it's a big challenge to make a roster. So when you made that roster, it's pretty impressive. And I think a lot of other people thought, boy, that's a little surprising that he's gone, you know, hit that level already. And then I remember watching you down through that season and seeing like some of the pick and roll plays you made and just how much you were looking like you belonged, and thinking, wow, that's pretty impressive. And I view you as a legitimate NLL player, and obviously that's your dream and your hope. And you have a chance, I would think, with expansion coming, or even if there wasn't expansion, but the expansion's got to give you increased hope of being on a roster next year.
Yeah, and it's kind of, I think that's a product of not only not necessarily just natural talent, but just my work ethic and my ability to try to make everyone around me better. I've always been around winning programs for the most part, and I've always wanted to be a winner, so I try to do whatever I can to make my team win. And I think the coaches kind of saw that in me. I try to pride myself in doing the little things getting to the bench first, trying to get ground balls, setting the best picks I can, and just being the best teammate. And I think that that kind of is contagious at times, the fact that I'm willing to do anything to win. And I think the coaches really like that, and I'm going to continue to get better, continue to be a great teammate, and hopefully next year we'll bring some other stuff, because I'm definitely going to come out ready to fly around.
And as much as the ideal obviously would have been to be in the NLL again, and you know the ALL wasn't where any of the players would be hoping to be that are looking at being in the pro league, you certainly looked like you had a lot of fun playing in the league, and watching you guys celebrate after the All Cup championship, you certainly all seem to be enjoying the process.
Yeah, of course. It's part of the process, but at the same time, you know, who wants to lose? I love this game every time I get a chance to play, whether it's playing in my backyard with my brother or playing on the floor with people that want to take their head off. I just love playing. And I love winning. So there's no point. Those guys, I'll tell you, there's a handful of guys on that team that didn't miss one practice, that were at every game. And the commitment when I first went into that team was kind of like, oh, I just need to keep playing so my NLL dream stays alive. But after about the second game, when I saw how much dedication these guys are putting to this organization, and the coaching staff as well, as first class, we always had everything we needed. It kind of stuck to me, like how much that this means to some people and how much it should mean. You know, anytime you're a part of the team, you're playing for the people next to you that are willing to give their blood, sweat, and tears out on that floor. So just the honor of the game. So it definitely picked up my mentality from week one until the end of the season. Definitely changed, and it all paid off. I couldn't be happier. It was an awesome group of guys, so look forward to seeing what they have to bring, because we have some extreme talent on that team.
Last thing I want to mention, I was talking to Brad McArthur, your coach, one of your coaches, about this. I mentioned that there was one time in early when you were with Buffalo, and you're up for a game in Toronto when I was at the game, and you and I had only met once or twice at that point, I think, and I actually confused you with one of the Bandits media interns as you were walking up in the gondola, and which you didn't realize at the time, and I asked you something about the team, about somebody down below, and I thought it was afterwards when I realized, I'm like, oh, that was Blaze. I thought, oh, it's kind of cool that you didn't look at me funny. You just answered my question as best you could. You had no idea, because it was not anywhere within your purview. And Brad was wondering if you'd remember. Do you happen to remember that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I said something. I'm pretty sure I answered the question and then kind of like was like, what the heck?
Yeah.
But no, I remember we had we were just getting delivered those pizza boxes, and we had our sodas up in the at the top. And I remember, and then I got to my seat, and I was like, "Why did Stamper just ask me that question? I was like, how am I supposed to know?" But I remember that. I remember.
I felt so silly afterwards. I'm like, I'm not even going to go and discuss it with him, but whatever. But, I think people will get from this conversation and from the way you responded to that situation, the character that you bring as well. And I certainly wish the best for you as you look to make your NLL dream continue.
I appreciate it, and I appreciate your time.
All right, thanks for coming on the show.
All right, see ya.
All right, that was two men you can expect to see in the National Lacrosse League in the coming seasons. Brad McArthur, the co-head coach and the general manager of the Whitby Steelhawks, the All-Cup champions, and the All-Cup most valuable player, Blaze Reardon. I certainly enjoyed my conversation with them. I hope you did as well, lacrosse friends. I'm Stephen Stamp. This has been Box LaBeat on NLL Radio.